You're listening to Toronto's number one real estate podcast, powered by Watson Estates. The most successful local real estate investing starts right here, right now. Here's your host, broker, investor, and social media influencer, Bradley Watson.
Good morning, investors. Bradley here from Watson Estates, and today is Sunday, September 13th. This podcast gets you ready for another fantastic week ahead as we continue to discuss what is going on in our local Toronto real estate market. And you're listening to the largest, fastest growing podcast for that very subject on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. We're having a whole lot of fun. Make sure you slam that subscribe button and also hit the bell for notifications. And we're going to continue to put out frequent content, fantastic content to keep you up to date as investors in finding where are the best deals and what opportunities lay ahead. And today our topics are going to float around these specific subjects. Number one, has COVID really resulted in Toronto residents fleeing to the suburbs? Do the numbers prove that that's the case, and what might be causing the trends that are taking place? How easy as well is it as a millennial to find that quote opportunity house? It wasn't that long ago, everyone's like, I want a little bit of work to be done that I can add value to that property, or this opportunity house, do they still exist today? And as a realtor and an investor myself, what kind of climate do I feel and I see in our market that you're walking into in that world? And if the national household debt drops, if we see those stats, will it remove this bubble that people talk about? Is that actually what that means? We're going to talk a little bit about what these stats are saying, because we've had some quite large information come out talking about the national household debt in our country. Well, if you're not already, before we get into our topic here today, make sure you get on our list of investors. We just recently sent out our first property, and within a matter of a day or two, it has an offer registered on it. And we're hoping to continue to put out properties. In fact, we're kind of eyeing an off-market one right now. So if you want to get on the list of investors to find high cash flow properties within a couple hours of the GTA that are either on or off-market properties, make sure you go to the link that's going to be down in the description, or on our podcast channel, you can go in the podcast description, or just send me a message and I can send you the link as well. But this morning, I've put, as a special occasion to this wonderful podcast we have, I've put on my favorite fragrance. It's a classic among us millennials, and it's called A Sense of Entitlement. And today we're going to talk a little bit about millennials. And a lot of the burden of real estate has been put on the backs of young folk across our city. Is folk? Young folks? Folk music? Has been put on the backs of these poor kids, these millennials, of which I am included, across the city. And we're going to talk a little bit about how that's happening, because they are the ones calling the shots. They're the ones that have been left with making the decision on what prices and what cities will grow in value in the next little while. So we're going to jump into our first topic, this idea of people running to the suburbs. Has COVID really resulted in Toronto residents fleeing to the suburbs? Well, that's what this Toronto Stories article is called, and here's what it has to say. The latest figures from TREB numbers seem to back up the trend, with overall sales growth in the 905 area, or near Toronto, higher than in the city's 416 center. But the reality is more complicated, experts say. That's because moving to the suburbs, or even exurbs, that's a fancy word, has been a trend for several years, generally among a certain demographic and due to the hot housing market in Toronto. And we've been saying this, not a new thing. But COVID has exacerbated the trend, experts say, but there are also factors to take into account that suggest we aren't about to see tumbleweeds in Toronto's core because of the pandemic. I love this conversation, and it's a good article. It's one of the top articles popping up under Toronto Real Estate today. I'll tell you what article number one is, and I think it's an absolute joke that it's number one, but we're gonna get there in a minute. Okay, so I love this article because it describes the predicament we're in, the movement, the flow of people, and really the best thing to consider if you ask top investors in our city, where should I invest my money? One of the best answers that I've heard, I don't know many better answers than this. I mean, of course, jobs and all these things matter, but where people are going to is a very good answer in identifying where property value is going to increase. Are people moving into that area or out of that area? And I love that answer. So we really want to know what is happening. Well, who's leaving and why? And when we look in the past, and I've done videos in years past about how boomers really, they are the ones that could call the shots. If they want to call the shots, they could. Boomers could have called the shots by moving, And because what happens is they would open up the inventory when they leave the city. So if you leave, all of a sudden now there's housing available. They're addressing the supply issue in our city. Or vice versa, let's say they move outwards, for example, or they move into the condo space. Wherever they go, they would tighten and squeeze out first-time homebuyers. They would really, the level of competition and demand that they could bring with them in just sheer numbers and wealth would create an amazing demand for that market. But they're not moving. The baton, for that reason, has now been passed to millennials. And this is what we see happening in our market. Millennials are having to drive much of the market now. This is a quote from Diane Petromalin. She's a big person in this article. She gives a lot of quotes and information. She comes from Ryerson University, the Center for Urban Research and Land Development. She says this: "We have underestimated the impact of millennials in housing markets and overestimated the impact of boomers." That's the baton changing hands, guys. Boomers are staying in their houses as long as they can. The Ontario government estimates the housing stock will not open from boomers. Boomers. These are the old guys. These are the old guys. These are the ones we're trying to protect with COVID, the old folk, yeah? And they're saying they're not going to move until 2041. And with what COVID is doing, do you really think they want to move into some kind of subsidized or supported housing by where the government's involved? I don't think so. This trend is not changing with COVID. In fact, it's going to keep them planted probably longer. And people say millennials are entitled, okay? But have you ever tried asking an old lady and telling her coupon is expired? Don't do that. Take the coupon, give the seniors discount, and move on with your day and smile and wave. Don't forget those face shields. Still, the move out of the city is a trend that can be seen across generations from boomers to Gen X, she adds. The most important consideration for those moving to the suburbs and even exurbs, again, such a fancy word, never heard anyone say that, but I guess that's a thing. The other is that millennials, the reason there is for affordability. The other is that millennials are starting families, which drives their need for more space. We're going to talk a little bit about the growing family, what that looks like. But if you look at surveys of how people choose their homes, first-time homebuyers cite ground-related homes as being a main consideration. They actually asked, why are renters now buying? The Mortgage Professionals of Canada had an August survey, and these are the top reasons. 28% said, quote, I want to live in a nicer home. 14% said, my home is no longer suitable. 14% said the current situation makes this a good time to get a deal. 12% said low interest rates makes this a good time to buy. And 11% says, I want to live somewhere less expensive. And do any of these surprise you? They don't surprise me. We see record low interest rates. In fact, I didn't even put this in the podcast, but I'll put it in a future podcast. But I just recently saw that there was a major bank, I can't remember what it was, I think it's CIBC or one of these big banks, announcing an under 2% five-year fixed rate mortgage. Go check it out. I'm sure you can find it on the news somewhere. I didn't even put that in here today. What big news is that? The interest rates are so low and it's encouraging first-time homebuyers to get opportunities, namely millennials, right? What's interesting is that many are skipping the one-hour commute and going beyond to places like Barrie, Innisfil. They've jumped over places like Burlington and Oakville to go to Hamilton. And Durham is another strong region attracting people away from the city. You can trade in a $650,000 condo in Toronto and buy an average detached in Oshawa for $672,000. Does that not just make sense? And surveys show homebuyers value quality and affordability as well as access to social networks such as families over amenities or commute time. I don't need to commute. Why do I need a low commute time? Millennials, they're not hoping to win in real estate. But I do hear that Hamilton is giving out participation awards. Maybe that's why there's such an inflow. All right, let's move on. I'm going to jump down to the next big point here because I want to grab the highlights from this article. When it comes to the pandemic's effect on where jobs will be located, Petromala says she sees, quote, most jobs staying downtown. While just how long the current work from home trend will continue is not clear. Let me ask you, and we ask this question over and again, this is where the real winners are going to win and the losers are going to miss out. Is are people going to come back downtown? Is working going to go back downtown or not? I believe it will. I do. It won't look exactly the same, but it'll look pretty darn close and maybe even more, most likely even more. And I was going to include some kind of ridiculous joke about millennials and, you know, but let's face it, they just don't work. The jokes don't work. Will Toronto empty out? One thing to note about the latest TREB numbers is that, and we've talked about this in the, because I thought this was fantastic. When people say, oh, well, Toronto is just old news and everyone's running to suburbs. We pointed this out in our last update talking about last month's stats. The sales numbers for freehold homes in the 416 area code, or the city of Toronto, were stronger than in the 905 region. Don't count out the six. Unless you're watching basketball, in which case we're moving on from that. The average year-over-year change in detached home sales in the 416 was up 65.3% versus the surrounding GTA region, which were up 47.3%. It was a blowout. It's a blowout. The detached homes, still being in the city, but having that backyard in Toronto, are doing fantastic. Is that the case for condos? Absolutely not. And it's actually, if you think about it, skewing the stats against Toronto. Right? There's such a big demand still to live in the city, but again, with more space. Most of these condos, if they don't have a balcony, what is this life? What is this life? I need some fresh air, man. I need a place for my dog to poop. What was I thinking? The condo market, on the other hand, if you think about it, they have more supply, they have less demand, and normally about 60% of the 416 transactions are condos, whereas when we look in the 905, 80% of them are freehold, meaning 20% are condos. So is this not going to skew the stats against the 416? Absolutely. And even still, we can see in the detached segment that the Toronto market continues to shine through. I personally believe people will find themselves way back into the city. I think that's just basic economics. I think that's basic. Like, that makes sense. Does that not? Like, if there's an opportunity to buy a property in Toronto, once again, that is in line with neighboring cities, there will come a point where people will go back into the city, naturally. And I also believe jobs will go there, but totally up to you. The population of the GTA has been growing through immigration, replacing those who are leaving. This is an interesting thing. I didn't know this. The generation after millennials is growing, whether through immigration, which is probably a big part of it, or births in Canada, because there's a lot of young people moving to Canada. I have seen that. In fact, Ontario is forecasting a higher birth rate than in the past few years. Don't be surprised that people want kids now. They want kids, which, what does that mean? I need more space. You can't leave me in a condo. And the slowdown in immigration is likely temporary, right? We see a lot of constraints on applications and processing and flights. What's an airplane? I don't know. Population clock, right? Immigration is still currently positive with all of these things considered, but just you wait when immigration comes up again. And they say U.S. elections is a factor. Guys, whether Trump's elected or not, I don't think that's going to bring an influx of immigration. We have seen that already happen. Is that going to continue to happen? Maybe, but it's not something big. What I think is more important out of the States, although kind of against what this article is saying, is I think the U.S. economy is really what we need to be paying attention to. Especially during an election year, we can see quite a bit of fluctuation, which obviously, with us being in bed with the U.S., they're like that neighboring giant. They roll over and we feel it. The answer to whether the city center will suffer depends on whether one believes this trend is short-term or long-term. And so that's the question for you. Is this long-term or short-term? Are people flocking away from the city temporarily? Or is this for good? And if you believe they're coming back, let me tell you, you are few in that category. And if you put your dollars, you are even fewer into that market, and you will reap rewards handsomely. Right now, I have investor clients grabbing deals as condo prices have softened, he adds. Am I telling people to grab condo deals? Not yet. But guys, even if you were to buy a condo right now, there are discounts. There are. It's a great opportunity even now to buy condos. I just don't think we're at the bottom yet. But if you buy something, then good for you. Congratulations. There continues to be an overall supply crunch in the GTA, suggests that real estate market won't implode in the 416. Here's what I think, guys. 2021 is going to be red hot for low rise because we see this crunch, 416 and 905. We see a crunch. Or as the kids would say, it's going to be lit. And later in the year, I think condos may too. Condos are going to do quite well in 2021. That's my opinion. And it's definitely unpopular. I think that's an unpopular opinion, but I do believe that we're going to see a hard bounce back, even if immigration and planes and everything haven't fully reopened. I still believe that. I do. I don't know. Maybe I'm naive. Naive young people. And I'm not the only one, because there's a lot of people running around right now looking for that, quote, opportunity house. Well, right now, I want to kind of segue over into this movement of people and ask the question, how easy is it for you as a millennial to find that opportunity house? And this comes from an opinion piece in the Toronto Sun called this, "Real Estate Still Opportunity Driven, But Opportunities Just Look Different These Days." And they go in and talk about how the path to home ownership is bumpy. And I love, there is a couple paragraphs in here that I love. I could literally take a picture, post on my Instagram, and just be happy for the day. And the last, when we get there, I'm going to tell you, oh man, it's good. It's good. Here we go. This is a good start though. Having worked with countless first-time buyers, because I agree with this, I can now chart the progression from bright-eyed and excited at first meeting to steely and determined as they sign that offer that ultimately snags them their new house. And often that house is nothing like the one they envisioned in our initial discussions. Is this not an experience that any of you realtors that are listening to this podcast have had? It is. People think, you know what, I'm going to get a finished basement, get a driveway, and get this nice little main floor powder room for my guests so they're not kind of tramping through my stuff. While others are a lot more specific even, right? It's got to be self-facing. I want to be 15 minutes from work. But really, is that what happens? No. You end up with a first floor condo and you're 20 minutes from work. Loser. Right? Under the sheen, fresh paint, and on-trend subway tiles is one of the biggest challenges facing buyers today. They are not just competing with one another, they're competing with investors. And this is what this whole article is about, right? This idea of back in the day, the good old days, you could go and get a place and think, you know what, I'm going to have this place for 25 years. I'm just going to do work as I go and kick the family out. We'll have Burger King for a couple of weeks and we'll just work on the kitchen and we'll be able to add value. Well, those deals are very difficult. I would argue they are the most difficult ones to snag now. Everyone from the professional builders who have agents on retainer, scoping out, quote, opportunity houses for them to sweep in and fix it up, to the novice who wants to get into the house flipping action, would-be buyers must now contend with many layers of arithmetic. And keep in mind, a lot of these big, high net worth, big investors flipping houses very quickly, get in, keep my costs low, and get out, have discounts in the ability, they're able to afford these homes because at a higher price, knowing that their cost to doing the work is so much less. And while one might think that there is more work that a place needs, the more likely you are to find a deal, I found, this is in this article, that it's usually not the case. And me, Bradley Watson, I agree. That is the case, right? And this is the reason, because the fixer-uppers, they have deep pockets. They're not paying retail on renovation costs. And so the arithmetic is definitely stacked against you when you go to try and outbid these people. You think, you know what? I'm okay with doing the kitchen. I'm okay with doing the bathroom. And honestly, depending on where you come from, I'm telling you, as a real estate broker, I'm telling you, this is the attitude some people have. You know what? I'm okay with doing a bit of work. If it gets me a deal, I'm happy to do the work. Well, I'll tell you this right now on the air, it's going to make it harder. You're almost better to just buy it fully done. Honestly, it wasn't that the boomers were more virtuous and hardworking. I'd say it's more that they had more opportunity to get into the ladder at a number of stages and put in the sweat equity. This is a thing reserved for the boomers. It doesn't exist. And it's the best explanation, in my opinion, that this article, this paragraph here, I told you, this is gold. Listen to this. So while millennials take a lot of heat for perceived entitlement and their need for immediate gratification, maybe the fact that many are starting out with houses filled with granite and soaker tubs is less about brattiness and more about Toronto houses being prohibitively expensive for most people until a certain point in their lives and careers. And once they're there, they have to take what is available to them. Real estate continues to be opportunity driven and the opportunities just look different now. Maybe the reason that those bratty millennials are buying the granite countertops is because they can't get into a property that requires a bit of elbow grease. They don't exist. They are super competitive. And so the fixer-upper properties, in my opinion, are the most competitive properties. And actually, if you're interested in like finding these deals, which are so hard to come by, it's so cutthroat, guys. The fixer-upper scene is so cutthroat and it's so high. Because of that, the risks are so high. You can make a lot of money, but it's super risky. It's why I prefer buy and hold strategy. But if you're interested in learning a little bit about wholesaling, which is an opportunity to get better deals and connecting with these guys, I'm going to be interviewing Toronto's largest or one of the largest wholesalers in our city this Wednesday. Make sure you check that out as well. But listen close, millennials. Just because you want that house doesn't mean you just get it. Right? I'm getting so sick of millennials and their attitude. Always walking around like they rent the place. All right, let's move right along. We're going to do some hot topics before we get into our last and final topic. Just some good stuff here, guys. I hope you're having fun. Make sure you hit the subscribe button if you are. Send us a comment. Let us know what you think. The more engagements we get, by the way, not only does it have good conversations within our audience, but it helps push the views. It really does. And it lets other people, other investors or would-be investors get involved in understanding what's going on in our market. So do a public service. You know, ignore that telemarketer today. I always say I'm a superhero because every day I ignore a telemarketer. Do that. and leave a comment on a video that you believe adds value to investors alike. All right, here we go. Let's do some hot topics. Number one, big news. It would have been big news. And the way I'm spinning this news is completely different than the way it's being sold. Average price of one bedroom apartment in Toronto drops to $2,000. You can hear the fear mongering. Prices are dropping, right? Rent is coming down. What have I been saying for months, guys? Before I even read this article, what have I been saying for months? I've been saying, yes, rents have dropped, but chill. They're slowing down. Have I not said that? I have. Okay, I have. Rentals.ca, National Rent Report, and Bullpen Research and Consulting, they prove us right once again. They revealed that in August, the average rent for all property types listed on rentals.ca in the country was $1,769, down $2 from July and $1 from June. So we're within, what, $3? Down and then up. Or three. Within $5, right, of the last 2 months. Across the country, the average monthly rate across the country in August was down, and this is really the sell here, this is the fear mongering, 7.6% annually. And you know, if you're an investor or if you're even paying any attention to the investment market, the rental market is down. In fact, I think it was over 8%, so that number is actually closing. And so when you say we're down 7%, it freaks people out. Yeah, you want me to freak you out more? There's some areas that are down 20%, but let me tell you this, there's no more drops happening now. It's flat. That's the story. That is the story. The report revealed, and this is in one bedroom in a condos in, or apartments in Toronto, they're down 1.3% from the month previous, a staggering 13.8% year over year. So we're flat about 1%. So we're not dropping at the same pace. Across the country, absolutely. Toronto will drop a little more naturally than the rest of the country because we are the most expensive in the country. We really are. Rent for two bedrooms fell 8.9% over the past year, but in the last month, over month, they were up 1.2%. To reach an average of $2,655. So rent dropping has young people out here super excited, of course, right? Let's not forget, though, that our city still remains the most expensive in the country, right? So celebrating to me is a bit, it's a bit odd. I mean, but so are millennials. They're a little odd because they can't even. Okay, remember I told you we're going to go into the top article of the day, and I don't think it's worth being a top article of the day. Well, here it is. Toronto condo price adjustment finds the buyer. Actually, I don't think this was the top article. I think it was the third top article. But this should not be a top article. Because when you click onto it, it's a Globe and Mail article. And it just pretty much says that the original asking price in April of this condo, it's like kind of a sample. Because you hear Toronto condo price adjustment finds the buyer. Like, ooh, condo prices are adjusted. Buyers are taking advantage. That's what I hear. Well, let's look at the stats. April, on this particular example, this is the newsworthy one, okay? $699,900 back in April. Well, they dropped their price in June to $684,000 and they sold it at a killer low price of $665,000. So I did the quick maths on this. That's a 95% of asking from the April asking, right? And to me, that shouldn't even be noteworthy. Like, why are we, who cares? 95% of asking, that's your deal. Right, I already believe, even now, I believe you could find a far deeper discount right now out there, right? Even now, there are great deals in condos. Now, is this the best time to buy a condo? I don't think so, but it's pretty damn good, and it's better than 95% of asking, tell you that much. And I got a comment about pre-construction every so often. I get a lot of people that are pre-cons, man. You got a lot of pre-cons following us out here, you fans. I don't get it, but that's cool. You do your thing. If you want help with pre-construction, I'm happy to help and I'm happy to answer your questions about it. But the question came from Saeed Nazami. Hi, Bradley. Do you know or do you think the current struggling condo market with rising months of inventory has put or will put a downward pressure on developers pricing their pre-construction projects? And are deals also to be found in the pre-construction space and not just resale market? Then he asked me about specific condos in Vaughan, and I'm keen on your opinion on investing in those. I know resale condos right now offer the best value, but with the current price, they're curious about pre-construction. I get it. Okay. So here's my answer. No. We haven't seen a pullback in price from developers during the worst of COVID, right? They have not dropped their price. Do I think they're going to? No, I don't think it's going to pull on them because they don't have to build that thing. They really don't. And the ones they're building are years out. If you're going to close it in a year and you think that's going to create fear from your buyer, then okay, fine, I'll close it in 3 years from now. The flexibility is unreal. The listing that he asked me about was at the 400 and Highway 7 in Vaughan. And I get a lot of questions about specific builders, and obviously there's a lot of them in Vaughan right now, but I don't like to dive deep in my podcast or even in the comments on them. Really, I reserve these analyses of different pre-con projects for my clients because it takes quite a bit of time, but I'm happy if anyone wants to work with our office, I'm happy to help analyze pre-construction projects to figure out where is the best value for your dollar, but If I was buying a pre-construction as an investor, the reason I would do it, the only reason I think that exists right now, in my opinion, is to avoid the rental market, right? Because I don't want to deal with trying to find a tenant because it's rough. It's difficult, which some people would argue it's going to get better from here on out, but it's rough. And that's about it, right? There's like, first of all, the other thing is it would need to be long-term. The closing date would need to be long. I would, with the fear of what's going on, if it's closing in the next 6 months, I'd be a little reluctant unless maybe I'm getting a deal from someone who's dropping that unit, but it's got to be a pretty good damn deal, right? But costs, in my opinion, like they're going to just get higher. They're only going to go higher. And as a buyer, they're going to be higher because you've got HST on the pre-construction projects. It's such an incredible area of speculation, the pre-construction market. But I mean, it's for some people. Some people like it. Yes, they're like, oh, I get a rebate. Yes, you do. You get a rebate, okay? You get a rebate if it's an investment property. You get a rebate if it's a primary residence. But I thought this is a great point to add this too. You've probably seen, or if you're kind of in the world of investing, you might get pop-ups that say, we'll rent your unit for free for a year, right? There's a lot of them. I've noticed that out, like further out, like near college towns and stuff. And they'll say, yeah, we'll rent your unit for a year. Be careful, guys. This is just a warning. Because what they do is the way that the rebate works, if it's an investment property, is you need to fill the unit and then you can apply for this HST rebate. Well, guess what? The builder, they put that contract, the renter for the year, in their own name and they themselves apply for that rebate. And that's $24,000 that they're taking from you. So just be careful. People think, oh, it's pre-construction, it's a standard process. Guys, they're in it to make money too. Make sure, this is why I don't know, understand why people wouldn't have some kind of representation when they're approaching these builders, but it is what it is. Okay, we're gonna move on, next hot topic. I know that was a bit of a long one, but there was an interview happening from Toronto.com with Brad Lamb, and I love this question. What do you see happening in real estate over the medium term, 3 to 5 years? And he goes on to explain, you know, there's all these things. We got great chefs, we got great hotels, we got all these development companies coming from across the world, Europe, Asia, coming to Canada and the West End, the Portlands are going to define our future. But he ends with this. Toronto is the new New York City. It will replace New York as North America's city of the future. I would not be surprised in 20 years that Toronto is a more expensive city to live in than New York City, just because it will be so desirable. Is that so hard to believe? Some people are cringing. Like, really? I don't know. Guys, we are on the map, no? We are the millennials of the real estate world. We're coming up, guys. We're coming up. We need to fully mature. We're a little bit of teenagers. Still a little bit confused whether we're in a bubble or whether we're growing. Is this a legitimate thing? Which brings me to my last topic. You ready? If the national household debt drops, if we see a household debt dropping, does that remove the bubble? If in fact there was a bubble to begin with. Well, this comes from an article, statscan.gc.ca. National net worth edges up as Canadian economy adjusts to COVID-19 pandemic restrictions. Let's have a conversation, guys. Let's look at some of the stats coming out of StatsCan, talking about, to start out here, household savings fuel record amount of net lending. So here, this just gives you an idea of some of the trends, some of the money movement that's happening. Although compensation of employees dropped considerably, this was more than offset by a significant expansion in government transfers to households meant to blunt the impact of COVID-19 related measures. The result, so what had happened with CERB? What happened with everything? Well, the result was a 10.8% increase in household disposable income. So now we got more money to spend. This increase coupled with a 13.7% decline in household spending. So we spent less money. So it pushed our household savings rate to 28.2% from a 7.6% in the previous quarter and 3.6% in the fourth quarter of 2019. So we have seen a tremendous increase in the household savings rate across the country. That household savings rate is aggregated across all income brackets. And I love this point. However, in general, saving rates are higher for higher income brackets, whereas lower income brackets tend to receive low or higher levels of government transfer. So all things considered, what they're saying is although more money is going to the lower income, they tend to receive higher government transfers. As an aggregate, the higher income savings rate were higher. And maybe it's not because of the transfers necessarily, but it's just smart spending, right? In an environment like this, I want to have the cash. I don't want to blow my disposable income. As a result of strong net lending, households were able to increase their holdings of financial assets and reduce their non-mortgage and consumer debt. We've seen mortgage debt has gone up, of course, because of the deferral, but non-mortgage and consumer credit debt numbers, they're strong. People are paying off these things and they're buying financial assets. So Okay. I'm trying to think of how I want to tackle this, guys. Okay. We're going to get into this next topic, this idea of consumer credit. So consumer credit drops sharply. Just listen to these numbers. I know it's a lot of numbers, but I'm going to break it down for you. On a seasonally adjusted basis, total credit market borrowing decreased to $0.9 billion in the second quarter from $26 billion in the first quarter. So we saw a huge drop in the number of new credit being added. A result of $21.5 billion decrease in non-mortgage and consumer credit borrowing. So we paid off $21.5 billion in debt. As households reduce their principal balance at a much faster pace than they added new debt and household spending. So I'm going to pay off my mortgage, or I'm going to pay off my credit card instead of the principal balance. So instead of paying off the mortgage, which I can kind of defer later, now I've taken that opportunity to defer, I'm going to pay off things like credit card. And the demand for mortgage loans rose. So the mortgage itself rose $22.3 billion up from $0.6 billion. So it's literally just a jump, right? Like I'm going to jump from I'm paying off my mortgage and it's such a big part of my debt to all of a sudden I'm paying off the credit card and I'm leaving the mortgage because why I got to pay the mortgage right now. As many mortgage providers offer deferred programs. Well, Here's what's happening, guys. If I were to kind of summarize everything, we see what we're seeing with the government paying us. And now there's talks of things like a basic income. Like there's some crazy conversations happening right now. But really all that happened was there was a transfer of wealth from the government to non-mortgage and consumer credit card debt. So to the consumer, right? So us as a Canadian, now I have the money and the government gave it to me. So therefore they are in a deficit. So I, from a personal perspective, have got a bunch of money and to pay off my debt. So my personal debt levels have dropped. In fact, John Pasalis tweeted out, household credit market debt as a proportion of household disposable income fell from 175.4%. Did you guys know? You probably did. This is a pretty amount among crashers or bears, people that are concerned about a market. The household credit market debt, that percentage of how much debt you have relative to your income or disposable income, that number is thrown around like crazy. And right now it's at 175%. Well, guess what? It's dropped now. It was 160 for the longest time and it pushed over 170. People are like, oh my God, market's going to crash. It's got to crash, right? Because the amount of money we owe versus our disposable income is crazy. Well, if that's the case, it just dropped from 175 to 158. As the household disposable income increased 10.8%. So what I want to say here today is we still owe the money. It's going to come instead now from, instead of it being credit card debt, it's going to come in the form of taxation or inflation in the future. Like we still owe that debt. It's just at a national level instead of on a personal level. The people who say credit card or household credit to disposable income is a measure of risk that we face in a bubble. So if you were the same person to say, we over 175, and I never said this, by the way, I've never said this because I never really thought it to be true. And this is proving that that's the case. 175%, that's so high. It's a reason that among all the G20 countries, Canada is the biggest bubble. It's used like that all the time. Well, okay, if that's the case, then is the measure of risk that we face now decreased? Like, are we in less of a bubble? And if the answer is no, then they're being dishonest, right? Because you can't have it both ways. You can't say 175% is us dying and now that we're at 158, oh no, we're still kind of dying. Like, it's still high, I guess, but if that was the argument, you would say things have improved, right? Otherwise, if you don't say that, like, are the people that are claiming that there was a bubble at 175 going to come out tomorrow and say, oh, we're at 158, therefore it got better? Are they going to say that? I don't think they will. I think that would be the more honest approach, but I highly doubt they're going to do that. All this is suggesting to me is you can't have it both ways. All that's happening, because if we were to discuss it right here, right now, do you think our situation in Canada has gotten any better with COVID? Like, did it just improve? Did COVID single-handedly improve our risk of being in a bubble? No. No, I don't know how you could argue that. Clearly, things are worse, right? Clearly, our situation is worse. All that's happening is there's a transfer of wealth from our government to the people, and it's going to come back to the government later in the form of taxation. But it's okay. We can relax. That means it's the millennials' problems, right? If we had a dollar for every time older people complain about millennials, I'll tell you, we could fix the economy they broke, and it will take the same number of us to fix the economy as it would to screw in a light bulb. People are like, how many millennials does it take to screw in a light bulb then? Well, enough to protest until the government does it for us. And that's kind of what's been going on. And we're going to see. I don't think we're any closer or further from a bubble in Toronto or in Canada. I think that that's an illusion. And I think this proves it. I think it really shines a light on, you can't take the percentage of consumer debt and use that as the only and true measure for why we are in a bubble. If that's the case, we are further from a bubble than we've been in a very long time. I'll see you guys next time with more. Have a wonderful week. Take care and keep it real.